Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Evitt.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And we are joined today by John Yanella. Welcome, John.
Good afternoon, guys.
Thanks for braving coronavirus to join us here in studio. Don't go ahead and use this microphone right here. You'll be just fine. No problem.
Don't mock me.
That's right. Well, you don't have coronavirus.
No, I don't have corona, but I sure sound like it sometimes.
Yeah. How many people shy away from you?
Oh, I've gotten some dirty looks in the grocery store.
I'm sure you have.
It's a bad time to have.
It's are good for social distancing.
It's a right. Bad time to have a respiratory infection. Let me just tell you that.
Listen, it was a bad time for me to have too much hot sauce on my eggs Friday morning. Overdid it and started coughing, and people are already looking at me like, oh, what's the matter with this guy? So believe me, I get it. But let's introduce John. John, welcome back to Soundography.
It's good to be back, particularly for a little bit different type of request as opposed to a specific band.
Boy, is it. And it's one that I think we're going to have a lot of fun with. Let's go ahead and kick things off by having you tell us what you are having us cover for this episode of Soundography.
Certainly. So we're going to be taking a look at 90s college rock. Back in the fall, I was listening, Brian, to you and Scott on the morning stream talk about the what is the perfect 90s college rock song that kind of defines the decade. And that put me on a deep dive into going back to my late high school and college CDs and albums. And you know, that was a month or two worth of nostalgia for me.
Oh, this is great. Because this is a thing that can probably go in two different directions. I think Cam and I might split up the directions that this goes in, and one of us look at what was considered college rock back then, but also what we were listening to in college, because it might be different things, right? Like I remember the t-shirts that everybody was wearing around that time. I was out of college, but I remember like what was popular with what I presumed to be college students at the time. And then there was the different stuff that I was listening to at that time as well. There's probably going to be some good Venn diagram overlap with that, but it gives us a chance to look at it from two different ways.
And it also goes back to, it was so different finding new music back then, you know, going to, at the time, School Kids Records in Raleigh and digging through, you know, albums and CDs and talking to the people who worked there to find, you know, music that wasn't necessarily on mainstream radio.
Right. You were going to say something, Hammond?
Well, what I was listening to wasn't on mainstream radio either all that much, but it was very much different from that indie rock college scene, because I was playing in local bands and doing that kind of stuff. But also, I was listening to the other end of the spectrum, maybe not quite alt rock, but I was away on the other end.
Interesting. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing to see what we talk about, because I know we're going to want to talk about what was popular, but also kind of what was outside the mainstream indie stuff and bands that got their start in the 90s, or at least got a new start in the 90s. There were a lot of bands that kind of changed their sound as times changed, as grunge became popular, as new metal became popular, things like that. What were you listening to, John, around that time?
So back at that time, it was, I guess you could call it indie rock. Just for an example, the summer after my freshman year, which would have been summer of 93, some friends of mine and I drove down to Atlanta to see a band that you're very close to, Jellyfish, at they were playing an outdoor arena, and when we came out, there was a flyer on the car for a band we had not heard of playing at a local venue, and it turned out that we ended up seeing the Wallflowers play to about 250 people in a small, you know, music venue.
Wow.
There in Atlanta. So amazing. You know, it ranged from the Wallflowers to Buffalo Tom to the Judy Bats, Sunvolt, going more towards the alt version, and then of course, you know, the more popular Smashing Pumpkins, Jim Blossoms, those types of bands.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool. By the way, speaking of Jellyfish, you hear about Licorice Quartet?
No.
It's it is Roger Manning, or Roger Joseph Manning Jr., Eric Smith, who were in the iteration of Jellyfish before they broke up after Andy Sturmer and Jason Faulkner left the band. They're getting back together and they're doing new music.
Real, I will definitely have to check that out because I was a big fan of theirs back in the 90s.
Cool. Yeah, it was something they announced actually yesterday. So timing of talking about this could not be better. But I'll send you a link. They've already got the first song up, and it's great. It sounds just like Jellyfish. So it's really cool.
I was going to say there seems to be a renaissance there because I believe the two of you were talking not too long ago about Jimmy Eat World getting back together and putting together an album. It seems like a lot of those bands from the 90s are kind of having a little bit of a resurgence around now.
It sure seems like it. Yeah. I don't know if it's money running out or whatever, but no, it is interesting to see how many of these bands are kind of reforming and putting out new music. Very good. So, man, I'd forgotten about the Judy Bats. That brings back some memories too. Holy cow. And Wallflowers and, so cool. When Scott and I were talking about this, I think what we had said was Smells Like Teen Spirit probably was the ultimate 90s college rock song. But is there another one that you nominate, John, as being a more accurate depiction of what music sounded like in the 90s?
So it seems like everybody was either a Nirvana or a Pearl Jam fan, and I was more of a Pearl Jam, a Pearl Jam guy. So when Tin came out, that was really kind of the band that kind of marked my freshman year of college back in 92.
Okay, so that would be more than Jeremy, more Alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff like that. Okay. That works. That totally, you know what? I'd say that's, that totally works because, Pearl Jam still around, you know, still putting out music, at least until recently, but Eddie Vedder's still putting out music.
Would the two of you consider Nirvana and Pearl Jam college rock? You know, I struggle with bands that got that big and that important to the overall music scene when I think about 90s college rock.
I think so. Hammond, would you agree? I mean, I think that they're outside the mainstream. They're not like a Smash Mouth or a Seal or an Alanis Morissette where they're perfectly suited for pop AM radio or FM radio rock.
I think they still consider as alt rock because there's an acquired taste to them. The people who loved them through the end, and those who didn't get it still didn't get it. And I think that they perfectly fit, even though they became kind of genre defining, part of this big four of grunge. Mm-hmm. And I know that you say that you're either Nirvana or Pearl Jam, but I was a Soundgarden guy or an Alice in Chains guy because they were far more metal than either one of those two bands were.
Right. Oh, for sure. Well, this is great. I can't wait to get into this because I'm looking forward to just firing up some playlists. And actually, instead of saying, all right, play everything by this band, almost more like a Pandora or an Apple Music thing where it's like, okay, let's start with a band I'd consider to be college rock and just create a radio station from that and see what comes up and see which things come up that are mainstream, and then thumbs up the ones that are more on the indie, on the fringe, and then see what happens this week. I really like this.
Oh, and also I have to say, just because based on the topic and how broad it is, Brian, I think he's breaking the show. Like the format's broken.
You broke it. Well done, John. You broke the show.
I will take the blame or the credit depending on.
Let's see how it turns out.
Yeah.
So one question for the two of you. Are you going to exempt bands that you've already done? Toad the Wet Sprocket live. You know, certainly y'all have had some bands that were called.
Goo Goo Dolls, for sure. I think we will, just because we've covered them so much. Certainly bring them up, but we won't go into any extensive detail. And I say, I'm going to put this out there, that neither of us pick songs for our playlist from any band that we've done a whole show about.
All right. Have we done the Goo Goo Dolls? Did you do that without me? Because we've done the Foo Fighters, but not the Goo Goo Dolls.
What? Oh, Third Eye Blind is what I was thinking.
Oh, okay. Goo Goo Dolls. Yeah. I'm like, if you did the Goo Goo Dolls, you did that without me.
That was from my other show called Schmoundography.
Goo Goo Dollography.
That's right. It's just a show every week is about the Goo Goo Dolls. What are they doing now?
You know they've got talent.
Exactly. Excellent. Any last things you want to tell us about, John, on this? And things to listen for, maybe directions to steer towards or steer away from?
Well, for two bands that are still near and dear to my heart, if either of you pick for your mix, either Emmett Swimming or Big Head Todd and the Monsters, I'll be very impressed.
Oh, Big Head Todd and the Monsters, a local Colorado favorite here.
They just played here in Raleigh about a month and a half ago.
Did
they?
I forgot all about those guys.
Really? Oh, yeah. No, they're we hear about them all the time. They're kind of like, they're as much a Red Rocks mainstay as Blues Traveler, another 90s band that we'll have to stay away from. Just because of their pop, well, just because they grew up here. So they're kind of always welcome back to Red Rocks, and they have a great following out here. Excellent. Well, John, thank you so much. Do you want to direct anybody to some social media places?
You know, similar to the last one on Twitter, it's at JF Ganella. And most of my posts end up having to do either with music or Appalachian State football. So you can cover sports or music.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much, John. And Hammond, how about you and I just jump right into this episode of Soundography? Welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And this is, boy, talk about straying from the format as much as we've ever done. This is not going to be one band at a time. It's not even going to be one year at a time. Really, we're looking at a genre and a decade, right? We're looking at 90s, but not just any 90s. 90s considered college rock.
Yeah, and John kind of gave us an introduction in why he picked this when we talked to him. So
that's right.
Hopefully, we've kind of done him proud with this episode.
Yeah, I hope so. And we'll tack that on there at the beginning of the show. Thanks again, John, for supporting us and for backing us to the point where you could make this selection. It's a very interesting topic, a very broad discussion. And so rather than do a month by month, year by year thing, like you're used to with our annual shows or other genre shows, I think we really just get into more of a conversation about 90s college rock, what we were listening to in college. Although, speaking personally, I graduated from college in 89, so I missed 90s college rock by...
Yeah, I only had 4 years of 90s college rock.
Oh, well, that's plenty. So that's good. This will be a good comparison. And that's kind of what I started with. I started actually with what I was listening to. Well, actually, I started with 80s college rock, because when I was in college, the bands that I was listening to were some of those bands that are considered college rock. The Pixies, Sonic Youth, the end of New Wave, I'm trying to think of who I had in my list that kind of continued on, Alphaville and...
Well, Crackers International came out in like 88, 89, and I listened to that through all of college. And that was a great little EP.
It was great, and I even saw them in a college venue. I saw them at the CU Fieldhouse in Boulder, but it was after I'd graduated and Tina and I were dating.
Yeah.
And we went and saw their tour. So that was my starting point, was what I was listening to in college. What I was listening to in college. And then I moved over to, all right, what in the 90s would have been the all indie college rock bands? Because I think the definition for me is bands that were enough out of the mainstream that college kids and kids that age would say, I like this band because, you know, so few people that I know have heard of them. And it's kind of like my in to this band. That's kind of what I think of with college rock. It's not what's playing on pop radio by any stretch of the imagination. Probably not even what's playing on at the time, the AAA format, the adult alternative.
Yeah.
this was stuff that was a little bit further outside the mainstream.
And for me, I was playing in bands, so I was thinking about some of the things we were playing, and then I was listening to a lot of stuff, and it was kind of a weird time for me, so I kind of just picked the things I was listening to. And, you know, let's throw out a couple of these, like, blanket caveat things out front. Yes. We've covered a fair amount of this stuff in the past. I mean, I was going back through. There's a fair amount of college 90s things we've covered. So we're not going to mention...
We can't talk about Cake.
Yeah. So this is like a nice little net for some of the oddballs out that I've wanted to bring up.
Foo Fighters. We couldn't bring up Third Eye Blind. Who else have we done?
Toad.
Pearl Jam.
Toad the Wet Sprocket. Right. Tool.
Toad the Wet Sprocket. Mm-hmm.
So, yep. And then the other thing I wanted to say is this is like the broadest topic we've ever tried to tackle.
Easily.
And I know that I'm not going to mention, you know, Jimmy's Chicken Shack more than right now. Why do you get high to change the sea? That's on your list. Please send us your top 10 lists. We want to see what you guys were listening to, because what I listened to and what Brian listened to, wow. We might have been holding hands down the primrose path in 88,
totally.
89.
Yeah.
In 91, I think we gave each other the finger and walked on separate paths.
We totally, like, looking at each other's playlists, I'm like, wow, okay, not even the hint of any overlap between our two playlists. And so I think this is, you know, we've invited you to tell us some of your favorites, or your, you know, what you would think would be a Stairway to Heaven song or things like that. This time more than any other time, I think we want to see your 10 song playlist from your college rock, your 90s college rock playlist, whether you were in college at the time, hadn't gone to college yet, or had already graduated, whatever. I'd love to see everybody's playlist.
Yeah,
it's a really fun experiment too.
Yeah, because there's no crossover with us, but it's all predictable. No. It's all super predictable.
It kind of is, right? I mean, there's one on there that I think everybody, if they have a beverage handy, is kind of expecting to see on your list. And I'll leave it at that. And we also stayed away from just flat out pop, right? So we can't really, you know, we're not going to have, well, you have it here. No Seal, no Celine. No Britney, no.
Yeah, no Smash Mouth.
Oh God, yeah, exactly.
Who's the other one? What's the other? Oh, the Butterfly Song.
Crazy Town.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, and it's funny because one of the things that I did this week was listen to a playlist put together by Filter, not Filter the band, but Filter the magazine, called '90s Alternative Rock. And in addition to the cool stuff, you've got, you know, 311, Goldfinger, Our Lady Peace, Foo Fighters, Cake, all that stuff. You've got the songs that you kind of forgot about because they sounded like all the other bands at the time. For example, 9 Days and This Is the Story of a Girl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We cried a river and ran the whole world.
And the Gin Blossoms. Like,
Gin Blossoms. There were so many that came up in this list that I was like, oh, I know this song. Never would have been able to tell you the band because all the vocalists have that same kind of sound to them.
And the one thing I'm very proud of, neither one of us picked Oasis.
I would consider them too mainstream to be college rock. I listened to a lot of them in the 90s. I mean, another, you know, some other day we'll do a 90s Britpop.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite. I think my favorite genre of all time is 90s Britpop. New Wave and 80s New Wave and 90s Britpop were my two jams. And
oddly enough, I love 80s New Wave, but instead of 90s Britpop, I'm 90s hair metal and thrash.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where our paths diverge.
Which is the oddest transition probably ever.
I think for you more than for me, like looking, because the stuff that I was listening to kind of came out of that.
Yeah.
Cocteau Twins, Throwing Muses, even Matthew Sweet, stuff like that came from, and Sugar, you know, Bob Mould came from Husker Du, which was an 80s kind of a new wave post-punk band. So, all right, well, let's start going through this stuff, because there's some definite subgenres that came out of the 90s. Alt rock is probably the biggest one, and I touched on that a little bit, but you know, bands that didn't end up in our playlists, things like Stabbing Westward, Fiona Apple, big in the 90s, alternative Spin Doctors.
Yeah.
Kind of across, like, they were kind of pop, but still, you know, you'd hear the song about Superman,
Pocket Full of Kryptonite.
Jimmy Nelson's Blues.
Yeah. Yeah. From the album Pocket Full of Kryptonite.
Right, exactly.
I think I'll talk to my analyst. I got so baffled. The suit of journalist did. Driving up the ball and through the roof. No, I say clock and they tell.
It's weird. I still really like Spin Doctors. I listen to them still pretty frequently.
Yeah, the main guy, whose name I can't remember, didn't he?
Chris Barron. He actually released a solo album like last year or the year before. I had him on my other show, and he's awesome.
That's cool. He had a cancer scare, though, mm-hmm. Didn't he?
He did.
Yeah. Hurt his voice, or what kind of cancer was it?
I don't remember. I just know that it put him down for a while.
Yeah, Chris Barron. Really, and you know, they had a unique sound. I'll say this, for as poppy and as much as people maybe wanted to ride Spin Doctors, when you heard a Spin Doctors song on the radio, you recognized them. When you heard Alice in Chains or Fiona Apple or Rage Against the Machine, you know exactly who they were. When you heard something like finding another list, one on my list here of like, let's see here. God, I don't want to say anything bad about Incubus, but because I really like them, but a big hit in the 90s, Drive.
Yeah.
By Incubus. And it sounds a lot like a lot of the other things that were out at the time.
Well, Incubus, I feel like there's like Incubus, Sublime, and 311 all kind of fall into the same bucket.
Mm. And I would put 311 and Sublime in the same bucket. Like if you were a pot smoker in the 90s, you were listening to 311 and Sublime for sure.
Yeah, I just feel like there was a lot of in each of the boxes there was a lot of similarity. And then there is this whole kind of whitewash of post grunge that happened at about 96 to 98.
Yeah. I'd even say earlier than that. 94 was when Nevermind come out in 91?
Yeah, I think Kurt Cobain killed himself in 94, right?
94.
Yeah.
I think that was it. So they basically had 3 years from Nevermind. And they had the album before that with Silver. And
yeah.
I mean, the grunge thing really kicked off in the early 90s, but yeah. Just continued. It didn't die off, didn't disappear at the end.
No, but there's that whole movement of like, we're going to try to be punk, both grunge influences, and that led to bands like Blink 182 and mm-hmm. Green Day.
Goldfinger's a good one.
Goldfinger, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there was a whole ska revival that happened in the 90s, which was, we've covered.
Right, we talked about with Mighty Mighty Boss Tones when we talked about that band, and who else? So kind of going in that big alt rock, huge big alt rock bucket. Vertical Horizon, another one of those bands that sounds so.
Yes.
You were fed in, now you're here and you don't know why. But under skin knees and the skid marks, past the places where you used to learn. You howl and listen. Listen,
you would never say, oh. I recognize this. This has got to be a Vertical Horizon song.
Yeah.
There's that Evan and Jaren song that I always think is Vertical Horizon. Crazy for This Girl. I always confuse it with Everything You Want because it sounds the same. All right. Then you've got the 90s acoustic rock. And we, you know, mentioned Fiona Apple, I think, is in there. Joan Osborne. Marcy Playground. I think that's where some of these sound alike bands also.
Well, you had, big you had, time. You had, then you had like the Jars of Clay, Mm-hmm. And then who did Counting Blue Cars?
Late afternoon. I could tell my heart far and shine stretched out. He walked with a purpose.
Dishwalla, yeah, see?
See, there you go. there's an example of it right there in
real time, everybody.
Yeah, and again, another one of my favorite bands, Counting Crows, probably also fits into this acoustic rock, 90s yeah. acoustic rock.
Well, and Lenny Kravitz had a hand at that for a little bit, and then kind of did that weird kind of 60s revival stuff that happened for a mm-hmm. while, which was really cool. I loved it. Like, Are You Gonna Go My Way is a great song. I'm never gonna knock yeah. that song.
Whole first album of his with Let Love Rule just was such a breath of fresh air, such a turning point. So it's cool.
I think maybe a Lenny Kravitz show might come up. That's now that I'm
totally
thinking about it.
Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Definitely. All right. So let's move over to kind of the indie alternative. And this is where I think the most ecology of the college rock comes in, and this is like holdouts, super duper holdouts from the 80s. So you had REM, which, you know, that's the things that the 80s, if we were doing 80s college rock, mm-hmm. and it was the stuff that I remember the kids, you know, outside the mainstream wearing the t-shirts for, it was REM, Pixies, Replacements, Big Star, all those bands. And
all your friends shopped at very, very different shirt places than mine did.
I'm sure they did. Yeah. You know, REM starting in the 80s, and they had a very different sound by the 90s that probably wasn't as college rocky as they were in the 80s. Pixies had broken up by the time the 90s rolled around. The Replacements, of course, fell into the 90s a little bit too, first few years, couple of years. But yeah, it was a turning point for bands even whose sound had changed at the turn of the decade mm-hmm. from the 80s to the 90s.
Well, and then we had that whole weird period with Kiss in the 90s with no makeup on.
Oh, right. Was that Pump It Up? Was that the album with...
Well, they did Unmasked, so the first one with no makeup.
Unmasked was that one.
And then they had like 110 in the Shade.
Lick It Up, not Pump It Up.
Yeah, Lick It Up. Yeah. 110 or let's see, something Shades. I can't remember the name of the album. It's got the Sphinx wearing sunglasses. Rosa had a lover on the shady side of town. Tito, he was king of the streets. And she was his possession like a jewel on his crown. Johnny, better run, better hide your heart, better hold on tight. Yeah, that was a weird time for Kiss because, like, Paul Stanley got to stand out and be a frontman, like a real honest-to-goodness, like, big hair right. frontman.
Right.
But then in 96, I think in 96, they re-put the makeup on and did the kind of the quote-unquote reunion tour, and mm-hmm. they kind of, I guess, became re-kissed. And then they kind of went back to what we all know and love. I mean, they've been doing that now forever, so...
Which is the way it should be.
Yeah.
Kiss should never have done the no makeup thing. Nobody was clamoring for them to go unplugged, unmasked.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say the unplugged movement of the 90s. Oh, that MTV yeah. unplugged thing was enormous and changed a lot of music.
And do you remember who the first band to ever do MTV unplugged was? We've covered them.
It was Pearl Jam, right?
Soundography.
Pearl Jam?
No.
What was it?
It's one of my favorite bands, Squeeze. Squeeze had the first MTV unplugged.
Oh, that's right. Well, that totally makes sense because their connection with MTV.
Right. The whole, right, spring break.
Yeah.
Did mm-hmm. The big spring break thing.
Yeah.
They were big with MTV. And then you did get like the Nirvana and the Eric Clapton and stuff like that. Some classic, like that Eric Clapton where he covered his own Derek and the Dominoes, Layla, one of his biggest hits. And it was one that he'd released 25 years prior.
Yep.
With a different band. So.
Got me on my knees, Layla. Begging, darling, please, Layla. Darling, don't you lose my money now.
Incredible. Yeah, that whole unplugged thing. Even though MTV isn't still doing it, you still see bands releasing albums, just an unplugged version of one of their biggest albums. I want to say Alanis Morissette, another 90s big performer, Tori Amos, have released acoustic versions of greatest hits or monumental albums of theirs.
Yep.
We touched on grunge, but let's dive deep into the grunge, Nirvana being the first. The pioneers, I think. Well, the big four.
Yeah, we had Alice in Chains, Nirvana, Soundgarden, and Pearl Jam.
Yep, that's your Mount Rushmore of grunge.
Yep, it really is.
And then all the other bands to kind of come out of the sides of that, and the movie Singles, which was a huge way to kind of see some of those bands for the first time. I think Eddie Vedder even played a couple members of Pearl Jam, I think, were even in the film.
They were in the band Citizen Dick.
Citizen Dick, right.
Well, and then there's also the other
band within a movie, yeah.
Then there's the other 90s film that kind of was the touchstone of that whole generation was Reality Bites.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that was funny. Singles and Reality Bites. You probably, if you described a scene, I might have a hard time remembering which of those two movies they were in, because they were kind of like that, breaking out on their own, but they were music heavy, movies. And I remember that one of them was Bridget Fonda. The other one was Winona Ryder and Janine Garofalo.
And Ben Stiller had a Dr. Seuss model on his desk that Winona Ryder breaks.
Okay. See, now if you would have told me, if you would have described that without using care actors, I might have said either Reality Bites, Singles, or Clueless.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Clueless was another one along those same lines. We'll talk more about movies and soundtracks in a little bit. New metal. And let's talk new metal, because we talked a little bit about Blink 182. Green Day kind of crossing over into that a little bit.
But that's more, we're talking more Biscuit, Corn.
Yeah, you're right. I take that back, because I'm thinking more along the lines of
that new punk sound.
New punk, exactly, not new metal.
Yeah. So I'm talking, I'm thinking.
Let's define new metal.
So I'm thinking it's like one end would be like Rage Against the Machine, and then you move through Limp Bizkit and Korn and Slipknot and Mushroom Head. And even Disturbed falls into this category. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there are all this kind of lots of hip hop influenced rock acts coming out, where there's usually like a rapper and a singer, or a growler and a singer. Everything's on 7 strings and it's detuned, and they're playing this cross between hip hop and thrash. And it was a real flash in the pan, and the people who liked it, and the ones that didn't really didn't. And after the dust settled in the early 2000s, there's Korn, Slipknot, and Mushroom Head are left. And that's about it. Well, it's Disturbed, too.
Love comes down without the abortion. Well, it takes a strong man, baby, but I'm showing you that door. Run, gotta have faith!
Punk.
Yes.
And so like Blink 182, My Chemical Romance, would you say? And
I think so.
Fallout Boy.
Yes, definitely Fallout Boy.
Simple Plan, I think, falls into that. Sum 41.
Oh, Sum 41. Oh, Sum 41.
Newfound Glory. It seems like, oh, Lit.
Yo, that's the other one. Lit. That's the other one. Who did the song Stacey's Mom?
That was Fountains of Wayne.
Oh, my gosh. See, I thought it was, I actually thought it was Sum 41.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
What's funny is if you would have said, oh, who did the song My Own Worst Enemy? I would have, my instinct would have said Blink 182 before I said Lit.
Yeah. What separated Blink 182 from everybody else were their videos, and what separated Green Day from everybody else was their songwriting. That's why they made it.
And that's why they still hold up today. Why mm-hmm. Green Day still, you know, Green Day puts out an album. If I don't buy it, I'm at least going to give it a listen, stream it, because their songwriting is so unique.
It's better than it should be for that genre.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, they were a standout for sure. Let's see. So that I think is a lot of the kind of the subgenres that came out of 90s and college rock. And what was it that kind of made these bands appeal to the 20 somethings at the time? Is it just the, I'm bucking the mainstream, I'm not listening to pop, I'm not listening to what my parents listened to, this is me branching out and discovering my own sound and my own kind of music?
Well, I think part of it was that the early stuff really did sound so much different than anything had come before. Grunge, the acoustic stuff, even the new punk sounded so different than things that had come before it, that it was kind of a, hey, look at us kind of staking our own claim. The sad thing is though, by the mid-90s, I felt like it was all kind of gotten samey again. I mean, 10 years on, and it's all become kind of bland. So I think part of it was that angry young man kind of vibe. And the other part of it, I think, was it was just so different that either you were eased into it just by evolution, because kind of absorbing it after the fact was not easy. Either you did or you didn't. I mean, it was something that I know lots of people who were like, 89, I'm done. Mid-91, I'm out.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Let's see. We've got a few more in here that we were talking about. Ween. Surprised we haven't done a Ween soundography. We need to. I think Ween would be a fun one.
Maybe Ween, you could have a guest chair.
You don't want to listen to Ween?
I don't need to listen to a week of Ween. You can Ween me right off that.
Sure. Let's see. We've talked about Foo Fighters, done them on the show. Oasis, Modest Mouse, Bell and Sebastian. Dinosaur Jr., another great one. It's really one guy, but performs under the... Jay Mascis performs under the name Dinosaur Jr. Offspring, I think, is another great one that kind of came out of that. Thousands, which is a bummer. All the Ever bands, Everlast, Everclear. I want to say there was a third one. Was there not?
Ever After. I don't know.
Ever Ready.
Yeah, they just kept going and going.
They did, and you think we'd remember them. But no, Everclear and Everlast. For a while, I couldn't tell which is which. They had two different sounds. Everclear definitely being more in that new punk sound. Mm-hmm. And Everlast being more in kind of the darker, they did the What It's Like. Hey, you know, I know what it's like to sing the blues.
Yeah, Everlast, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he used to be with House of Pain.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't even talk about like bands like Cypress Hill.
See, and that's so what that, I was going to... I actually made a little note about Onyx because they did a song called Slam. And that's the one thing we haven't really talked about yet is 90s hip-hop was going through a huge transition. It was going from that simple 808 bass sound to things that were far more orchestrated and more lush in sound and far more produced and complicated musically, that they were doing things. And they were trying new things with patterns and rhythms and... lyrical deliveries that was going through this huge evolution that's led to a lot of innovations and a lot of great music. And sadly, everyone's now just mumbling their way through hip hop. General Electric, the lights are blinking. I'm thinking it's all over when I go out drinking. Oh, making my mind slow. That's why I don't with the big four. Oh, bro, I got to maintain. Cause it like me is going insane.
Yeah, it's a very different Radiohead. We need to talk about Radiohead.
Yeah, I think we'd be really, really in trouble if we didn't mention Radiohead at least a little bit. I honestly wanted to like Radiohead because they're everything that I like. But for whatever reason, I just got so just down listening to them. They were not... They were talented. They were musical.
Shoegazy?
They're just this so... Shoegazy is a great word for it. Almost depressive is another word for it, too.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I really wanted to. I swear to everything that's holy, I wanted to like them. Couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You float like a feather.
Like, it was so easy at the beginning to say, oh, yeah, I really like Creep. What a great song. And then it's like, oh, okay, yeah, High and Dry is cool. It's not quite as radio-friendly. And, oh, Fake Plastic Trees, okay. And then you get into Paranoid Android and Karma Police. It's like, oh, yeah, these guys are not going the direction that I thought they were going to go.
Yeah.
I still really like them. I still really like Radiohead. But... I like a Radiohead mix more than I like going straight through one album.
Yeah, I think
Computer maybe, but
I think if we did a Radiohead show, we'd end up feeling about them the way we did about Primus, where Smatterings, awesome. Whole Week, not so good for the mental health.
Yeah. Yep, agreed. U2, Rattle and Hum. So U2 had, Zooropa. Oh, no, that was 80s, wasn't it? Oh, no, it was 90s. Mm-hmm. Zooropa and their whole Zoo TV tour. The drastic change of their sound, but like Rattle and Hum, I think was the beginning of that.
Yeah.
And that was 1990, right?
I think so. I think it was 90 or 91. I can't remember.
Tina and I were dating. We hadn't gotten married yet, so that would have been 90 or 91. When Rattle and Hum came out, and then all the other,
I feel like stuff came out. Rattle and Hum was a big deal for a couple of reasons. One, because it's a great film, but two, because it really did put a pin in one style of U2 and signal the beginning of the next style. And no one saw that was what it was. But looking back, that is clearly what that was. Is, hey, we're going to tuck all the Streets with No Name off to the side, and we're going to jump in the car and go in this direction. And people are either going to come with us or they are not, or they're not. And looking back, that was the beginning of it.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, it totally was. But then we talked about that a little bit, how, you know, there were a few bands like that, REM being another one, that when the clock struck midnight on December 31st, 1989 into 1990, there were a lot of these bands that almost seemed to change their sound along with the new decade and say, all right, we've got to move with the sound and the times. A couple big concert events that probably were meant to be a lot bigger and better than they turned out to be.
Well, I think 94 was good. Woodstock 94. Woodstock 99 was kind of a mess.
Yeah. And let me look and see who, so Woodstock 94 would have been the 35-year? No, that would have been the 25-year, right? 70-95, yeah. So that would have been the 25-year anniversary of the original Woodstock. And I remember buying the album, buying the quote-unquote soundtrack to Woodstock 94. But some of the bands that played there, Delamitri, Violent Femmes, Collective Soul, Sheryl Crow... James Live, who we've talked about on this show, Delamitri. Oh, I said Delamitri. Blues Traveler, who we've talked about on this show. Joe Cocker and Crosby, Stills and Nash played Woodstock 94 in addition to having played the original in 1969.
Then there was
Cranberries, Melissa Etheridge, Nine Inch Nails, who we've talked about on this very show. It's cool.
And then we also had other tour festivals kind of start up, like Lollapalooza and the Horde Festival.
Right. And I went to the second Lollapalooza when it came through Denver and saw Henry Rollins Band, the Violent Femmes. Fishbone were supposed to be on that tour, and they didn't come through Denver. Jane's Addiction, I think, was part of it. Susie and the Banshees, I think I remember. Ice Cube, Body Count, Butthole Surfers. So I mentioned Henry Rollins.
He's not. That's not Butthole Surfers.
No, I know. It was.
We covered that before.
I know. No. What was his thing? Was there was something? What was his band?
Wasn't he
before Henry Rollins Band?
Wasn't it DRI?
Black Flag.
I knew it was something. Black Flag. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so you know they all came through. So I saw that. That was a great show. It was the only Lollapalooza I went to, and it was way before they started getting so big and hated because they'd gotten so big.
Well, yeah, because then they started bringing in bands like Metallica, which seems to be very anti-Lollapalooza. I love Metallica, but they don't belong on Lollapalooza.
Right. I want to say that Peter Gabriel's WOMAD stuff started in the 90s, too. I don't think that branched into the 2000s. Let's see. World of Music, Arts, and Dance, founded in... So the original thing founded in 1980 by Peter Gabriel, but the first concert... Well, never mind. I think those started in the 80s, which surprised me. I didn't think that they started until the 90s. Cool. I think I saw Sinead O'Connor as part of WOMAD when it came through.
Oh, cool.
Denver. Yeah. It was a really good show. It was really, really cool. And so visually amazing with... dancers and lights and video screens behind the band and stuff. Yeah, really cool. All right, so kind of running through all the bands and kind of the groups that made that era music, cover the soundtrack for us. But let's talk about actual soundtracks, movie soundtracks. What were some of the biggest ones that we had of the 90s.
Okay, so I don't know if I want to say them biggest. These are some of the ones that I put down as ones
the most
that,
memorable.
Yeah, kind of memorable. Because like Titanic, that was huge. But who's going to mention that?
Right.
I guess we just did, but whatever.
not for the reasons that they want.
So yeah. I picked The Faculty because it's not a great movie, but the soundtrack is far superior to the film. And there's a lot of really good covers on there. I think... Soul Asylum does a cover of School's Out that's on that. That's really good.
Yeah, a lot of really good stuff. Yeah. Covers on that one.
I actually really enjoyed the Beavis and Butthead Do America. It's got a lot of great music on it.
Yeah, it's a good cross-section, too, of what we were listening to at that time.
And then Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey had some good stuff on it. The Cable Guy is a terrible movie, in my opinion. I cannot stand that movie. It's one of the few that I've walked out of.
Yeah, it's... Oh, you really?
I walked out of it. I've walked out of two Jim Carrey films. This one, that one, and The Mask.
Wow. Okay.
But the soundtrack is good. It's got Jim Carrey singing Somebody to Love, which oddly enough is way good.
Yeah. I mean, it's over the top.
Yeah.
But,
and then Godzilla is a terrible movie, but the soundtrack sadly has a few good moments, not the P. Diddy thing, but there's some other good songs on there. Then Clerks had a good soundtrack.
Clerks was great.
I need to mention the Sponge soundtrack because it had a ton of potential on it. Everybody on there, Marilyn Manson, DJ Shadow, Metallica, there's some great band names on there. But just like the movie, all the potential, no payout. So skip them both unless you're doing it for film sack.
Yeah.
Point Break, Philadelphia.
Bruce Springsteen's Philadelphia soundtrack. Yeah. Great. Yeah.
Encino Man, funny movie, kind of a dumb movie. Great soundtrack, couple good covers. Had a cover of Mama Said Knock You Out. I think it has Stone Cold Crazy on there.
Yeah, right. Okay. I think I do have a few things from that soundtrack.
Yeah. 8 Seconds. I'm not a big country fan, but my wife loved that soundtrack. So
that's right. That was the Luke Perry
rodeo film.
Yep. Yeah.
Twister had Van Halen on it. A couple of new Van Halen songs. Bigger, okay. Longer, and Uncut. One of the unsung musicals of the 90s. Armageddon.
The South Park Bigger, yeah, Longer, and Uncut. Yep. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Armageddon, Lost Highway, The Matrix all have amazing soundtracks.
Mm-hmm.
Dangerous Minds, So I Married an Axe Murderer, The Commitments, That Thing You Do, which, I mean, really.
Yeah, The Wonders.
Yeah.
Or The Oneaters, depending, yeah, depending on how you want to pronounce it.
Intentions had some good music on it. Pump Up the Volume, Natural Born Killers, and Judgment Night. Then we got Bodyguard, you know, the Whitney Houston.
Yeah, and that thing was such a big, it was, you know, one of the best-selling soundtrack albums in history. I picked it up for a couple things. There's a cover of What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding. And because of that soundtrack and how big it was, it allowed Nick Lowe to buy a new house because he did the original.
Oh, Ramsey, wow.
Schwartz, original version of What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding before Elvis Costello.
I think it was big enough that it allowed Dolly Parton to buy an amusement park.
Well, sure.
And then you have like singles and Reality Bites and then The Crow, yeah, and then Romeo and Juliet are some of the ones that I made lists of. Put on the list.
Yeah, that Romeo and Juliet had a great soundtrack. Garbage on there. How did I not even talk about Garbage as part of this? They were great. I mean, they weren't. No, I think they would fall into 90s college rock.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. All right. Well, consider Garbage my 11th 11th song in my playlist that I didn't include.
Okay. Done. Done and done.
I would die for you. I would die for you. I've been dying just to feel you.
Okay. So speaking of the playlist, we really don't have a way to do a Stairway to Heaven song, but should we say It Smells Like Teen Spirit? Can we just, would that be?
Probably.
The most likely.
Yeah.
90s.
Either that or the Titanic song. I mean, those are both monsters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about the Stairway to Heaven for any music in the 90s, probably I will Always Love You or My Heart Will Go On. But if we're talking college rock, popularity of Smells Like Teen Spirit, you'd still get enough outside the mainstream that people would say that was there.
And before we kind of blew over the whole 90s country revival, it's not that we don't like it. Well, maybe it is. Mm-hmm. But it's just that it's even a more broad spectrum because it covered everything from like twangy country all the way through, what's her name?
Shania Twain,
yeah. And so it's I don't know how you got Shania Twain from that hint, but good for you. We've been working together for a while.
she was the biggest female country artist in the 90s, yeah, without a doubt.
So I mean, it covers such a huge thing. We'd have to do a whole other show about 90s country. So mm-hmm. we're not throwing shade or pitching hate per se.
I think it's really just because I wasn't listening to any of that in the 90s, so it's hard for me to say, oh yeah, that was such a big album.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to our playlists. And as usual, when we do a genre, we do 10 songs instead of our usual 5. And I was such a had such a great time listening to all these songs and thinking back to what I was listening to back then and what I would have considered to be a college hit versus a mainstream hit, that I created this playlist and I was just jamming on it all weekend long. So here we go. Here are my 10 songs, starting with Sonic Youth, 100%.
Chick is mine.
It was tough to pick between either that or Cool Thing. Cool Thing is a great song that Kim Gordon did based on conducting an interview with LL Cool J and having him kind of brush her off, which kind of made her infatuated with him. So she wrote this song called Cool Thing, and they even have like a sort of a rap, not really an interlude, but just some guy who's supposed to sound like or represent LL Cool J in that thing. But the song I picked was from the same album, 100%, and it's a great song. And it's funny, if they would have been able to predict how often people say the phrase 100% in 2020, they would have trademarked that song title, as much as you can't trademark a percentage, but it's just so overused these days. We mentioned The Replacements earlier. This was from their last album, which hit in 1990, so just barely under the wire for a 90s college rock song, but these guys were all over my college rock mixtapes in the late 80s. The Replacements were just so great, such a great band. And if you're from that area, what was it, Chicago or the upper Midwest, you just called them the Mats instead of The Replacements. You'd call them the Placemats or the Mats for short. And Merry-Go-Round was a great song.
A troubled doll around your neck when you lost. You wouldn't make a sound, but I could hear your little heart pound. And I watched your feet slip off the ground.
Matthew Sweet, Evangeline, came from his album Girlfriend, and I didn't want to just go right to Girlfriend. The biggest hit from that album, but he would go on to be one of my favorite cover performers, both solo stuff and stuff that he did with Susanna Hoffs from the Bangles. And Girlfriend, the album, was just in constant rotation in my apartment. I had a top loading 5 CD player. So what was really cool about it, as opposed to like the 6-disc cartridge based CD changers, is that I could change whatever CD wasn't playing, I could pop in a new CD at any time. And so I'd put it on shuffle by the song. It would play a song, and then as soon as the turntable would rotate and expose the CD it just played, I'd lift that CD up, put in another CD, and basically have iTunes shuffle before iTunes. I'd forgotten about that. That was such a blast. Next one is Sugar's If I Can't Change Your Mind. Probably the biggest hit of any of the songs on my list, but it was Bob Mould's band after the breakup of Husker Du, a band named after a board game, a board game kind of like Concentration. But they're so good, and Sugar was such a great 90s sound, a great snapshot of how the 90s sounded to me. Husker Du kind of reminded me of Peer Ubu, the band Peer Ubu. And so I went to their album, which was Story of My Life for Kathleen, which was a modest college radio hit.
Kathleen, call my name.
The lead singer, his voice has been described as James Stewart trapped in an oboe. And from that same album is the song Sleepwalk. I like both of those, but it was a tough sell that I stuck to Kathleen. Pavement, these guys are so 90s college rock. They were the first band I thought of when we heard the phrase. We came to the point where we were doing this week. 90s college rock to me just goes right to Pavement. But I never really got into them. It's kind of like how you were with Radiohead. I knew a lot of people who really liked them. I had a hard time getting into them, with the exception of this one song, which was the whole reason that I bought the Crooked Rain album, Cut Your Hair. And basically, if I could have bought by the song back then, back in 1994, I would have done that. Liz Phair, next on my list, Supernova. I think for second album, first album was Exile in Guyville. She is such a rocker and a total rocker chick. And probably the most sexually suggestive rocker chick that I can think of, maybe aside from lead singer of Transvision Vamp, that just crossed my mind. But all of her songs were about sex. And Supernova probably is. I don't know. It's not overtly about sex, but she did a whole mainstream thing with a self-titled album right after this album, which was called Whip Smart. And it was such a weird turn to hear her do more mainstream poppy songs. But this was a great album, Whip Smart. Down by the Water, PJ Harvey. This is just a really dark, disturbing song, really disturbing, about a woman giving birth and then drowning her baby in a river. And but you don't really know it's about that until you start studying the lyrics. And everybody knows the refrain at the end of the song that goes, "Big fish, little fish swimming in the water." They used it recently with Peaky Blinders a couple years ago, and it got a little bit of a resurgence then, but PJ Harvey, one of those, another one I'd consider just straight up college rock. Heaven or Las Vegas is my number 9, Cocteau Twins. Because recently, in talking about these guys, I got them confused with Throwing Muses. Both of them, 90s college rock, late 80s new wave into 90s college rock bands. They don't sound anything alike, but they both came out around the same time. They were female fronted bands, and I love the song Heaven or Las Vegas, so included on this list. These guys absolutely were college rock listens of mine in the 80s and would have turned into college rock if I was still in college in the 90s. And then, because I mentioned him a second ago, Throwing Muses, is Tanya Donnelly's band. She would go on to join Kim Deal of the Pixies and form the Breeders, and then form Belly later on after leaving the Breeders. Both of those, Breeders, Belly, and Throwing Muses, all three of them college rock for sure. As a matter of fact, thinking about this, she'd actually make a great soundography subject someday. But, you know, as you listen to the chorus of the song, listen to the guitar, like it's almost like she's in her car singing along to this song, doing the guitar sound. She does in the chorus of this. The song is Not Too Soon. Stop one. uses. And that's my 10.
All right. Just to kind of prove a point here, I had not heard any of these songs until I put them on the Spotify playlist today. Shows you
it blows
just
my mind that even the Sugar song didn't sound familiar to you.
It just goes to show how much of a canyon there was between types of music and in the availability of music in the 90s, how it just kind of proliferated into this wide thing. And I mean, like I said earlier, Brian and I were holding hands, skipping down the path in the 80s, both listening to our Wouldn't It Be Goods and our Erasures. And then grunge came along and thrash came along and hair metal died.
Just threw a rock right in the middle of our path, and you went on one side of it and I went on the other.
Talk about a fork in the road. So, and Brian picked songs that were legitimate college rock. I actually put bands that I listened to while I was in college. So maybe I misunderstood the assignment.
I think it's cool to have both sides of this.
Okay.
So I like this.
I just want to make sure that I don't get disqualified because I didn't understand the assignment. So my first one was Sullivan by Caroline Spine. Now, this is a dumb song teaching legitimate history.
Looking for the Sullivan train to come, and he and five boys would run to the top and salute him as he went by. First we'd wave hello, and then we'd wave goodbye, goodbye.
What does it teach? What's the
song about? It's about the Sullivan brothers who were on station together in World War II on the same ship. The ship sank and the family came to an abrupt end. Like all the sons were killed in the same battle, which is why now brothers are separated. And if all of them, let's say you have five brothers and all of them die except for one, they send the one home to survive. They don't want families wiped out because of war anymore. So,
yeah, right.
So the idea of the Sullivan. So I went down this huge rabbit hole about the Sullivans after listening to the song. I spent like a day and a half in a library reading about them because it was just fascinating to me. Then I picked In My Dreams With You. This is from the Steve Vai album where he kind of put a band together. It's not just a solo album. It's got Devin Townsend on it. And he's the vocalist, and Steve Vai is a guitar player, and I think a couple other people are on there. But the album had a lot of hit and misses on it. There's some really good stuff, and there's some really weird, hard to get your head around stuff. This one is absolutely one of the best songs in the album, and I want people to listen to it. I want people to, experience, because it's a great, great Steve Vai song. It's not just a piece of music where he's playing and noodling around. It's the actual song, and it's worth listening to. Then I picked Fall Into the River from the band Ollie Ollie Oxenfree. They're not a huge band. This is local college rock, Utah, Provo, Utah rock band, and they put two or three albums out. This is off their album The Garden. This song's called Fall Into the River. I let Brian listen to it before we started. Brian, what did you think?
I liked it, actually. Yeah, it's funny. I'd never heard of Ollie Oxenfree, the band, before. I'm assuming that the lead singer's first name is Ollie.
No, actually not.
Because they don't spell it like the game, Ollie Ollie Oxenfree, which is O-L-L-Y, I think.
Yeah.
So, it's cool.
Yeah.
Kind of dug it. And it did get a little proggy about 2.5 minutes into it.
But it's fine. It's good stuff. Then I picked What Would You Say from Dave Matthews. I don't care what people say. The song still holds up. It's a cool song. And it fits that kind of mold of college rock. I mean, maybe this is the one anchor that I have in college rock music.
You're not the big one. You a monkey on a string. Don't cut my life.
to pick this song called What You Give by a band called Svengali. Svengali is a wannabe grunge band. They never got very far, probably. They still might be doing things, but I don't think anyone cares or listens. The reason I picked this song was this has a very key moment for me in college. It was the first time I'd ever been sent an album to review. I've been writing a couple little reviews for a local paper, and I got sent this thing like, hey, write a review. And I never got around to writing the review, but I listened to this song, and I really liked this one song. And so I've hung on to it ever since. It's like a really nice little college memory for me about
that's very cool.
Entering into the world of swag, for, merch, or yeah, whatever.
Right, so. Getting payola. But
yeah.
Did you ever get any payola?
No, I only did it for like maybe 3 months, but it was a real short-term thing. But I remember I got this, I'm like, ooh, and then I just never went anywhere after that.
I got a dollar that was sent to me with a record or a CD to play on Coverville early on. And the dollar has written in big red Sharpie payola right on it. And I've got it still on my wall because I think it's the funniest damn thing.
That is very funny.
The first A is the pyramid on the left side of the back of the dollar bill. Oh,
that's great.
I love it.
Then I picked Clean My Rooms from Corrosion of Conformity. In the 80s, and they're more of a punk band, and then all of a sudden in the 90s they decided they were going to be a metal band, and the song Clean My Rooms is one of my favorite songs of all time. I love this piece of music because it's just so drivey and grindy, and you know, it's a great song, so I had to put it on there. And the moment we've all been waiting for.
Yep,
grab your glasses,
I've got it right here.
Dream Theater's New Millennium. The reason I picked this one as opposed to Pull Me Under or some of the other songs they released in the 90s or Lie or is because this one checks a couple boxes for me. It's a Dream Theater song, yes. It's not really one of their quote-unquote hits, but it also features John Myung playing the Chapman Stick. So it kind of covers a lot of boxes for me. Also, it's one of their cooler songs. So go listen to New Millennium if you've got, you know, 7 to 9 minutes.
Is this the first time the Dream Theater has made it into a playlist? I know we've done
no years they did 2002 like 2002 okay. I think I stuck them in there, so, yeah,
gotcha, okay.
Yeah, I think it's a like one of like two times they've made it officially in now.
Yeah,
sooner or later we'll get that show, Brian.
Okay, yeah, sooner or later
someone will make us someone will make you do it.
You'll have to do it. You'll have to actually become a patron for a month.
I'll make Stacy buy it. Then the next one is the Hillbilly Happy Smash by a band called Psychofunkapus. Pick up that empty bottle of beer, smash it over the head of the barman there. If you start bleeding, don't you run, don't you run, because it's all in fun.
Yeehaw! Grab your partner, make her stare, strip on down to your underwear.
Song the first time in a little mom and pop record store in Holdrege, Nebraska. Don't know anything about this band. I had to come home from Nebraska, figure out who it was, find the album. The album's called Skin. They had another song on there called Drink Like a Fish, Ride Like a Horse, Drink Like a Fish, something like that. But it was weird. This is a strange band. This is a straight up square dance song done like punk style. And it's hilarious. And I still think it's funny. And Brian, you heard it for the first time today?
I did, and I thought it was funny as well. I'm going to listen to the whole thing when I get a chance.
The last verse is my favorite. It's about bouncers coming.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had to include I Carry Your Heart by Michael Hedges. It's from the album Taproot.
I want no word for beautiful you are my world, my true. And it's you are whatever.
This is my favorite thing he ever did when he was alive. He combined the words of an E. Cumming poem and then added his music to it. And it's this really very heartfelt, touching solo acoustic guitar vocal piece of music that it really hits a lot of emotional beats. And I'm glad he did it. I'm glad that I have it, and I'm sharing it with everybody here. And then the last one I picked was Floods by Pantera. I was not a Pantera fan until I heard Floods. And then I realized that I'm kind of a wishy-washy Pantera fan because there's some of their stuff I love and lots of their stuff I don't love. Mm-hmm. This is one of the ones I love. It's off Southern Trendkill. That one's a pretty good album all the way through, but there's some really good screaming on it, which Brian won't appreciate, but I'm sure there are people out there who will.
Screaming in the 90s screamo songs?
No, not screamy. This is like growling screaming.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Not like screamy, like screaming the lyrics.
Not that Cookie Monster.
No. Well, there was that. Cannibal Corpse released an album in the mid-90s, like the early 90s, that is very much Cookie Monster vocals. But this is Phil Anselmo. And Phil Anselmo, regardless of what people think, he's got a great voice. And he can do the full-on melodic singing all the way up to the angry, like in-your-face, tear-your-ears-off kind of sound. Mm-hmm. And Phil's got an amazing voice, and this song kind of features it really well. Oh, and then I also throw in, too, that two of mine aren't on Spotify. So I added Got No Shame by Brother Kane, which is a song I used to play in a band when I was in college. And then Chutes and Ladders by Korn, because we mentioned Korn, and Korn needs a little bit of love. That's the one that starts out with the bagpipe, and they kind of have their way with nursery rhymes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I remember that one.
And one of your songs isn't on there either. Pierre Ubu isn't on there.
Pierre Ubu isn't in there? Okay. Well, then I'll give you an alternate.
Okay. Yeah.
You know one band that I completely forgot about until we were doing this?
Huh.
They Might Be Giants. Big.
Oh, yeah.
They started in the late 80s, the first album self-titled, and I think Lincoln was also in the late 80s, but Flood for sure had to be a 1990 album, and so I'm going to give you something as a replacement to put in there.
Okay, well, like I said, we're going to still leave our playlist the same and use those samples, but as far as the playlist goes in Spotify, just pump it up to the 20 songs.
There you go. Perfect. Very good. I think it was a great show and, you know, broke the mold a little bit for what we usually do in one of these. But I think for the content, it was the only way to do this. It was the best way.
Also,
but now we really want to do. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say also, this is episode 100. So we kind of had to do something different.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Hey, happy episode 100, Hammond.
Yeah, happy episode 100. It feels like just the other day we were talking Kelvin Gilbert and recording Alan Parsons.
Right, exactly. And, you know, technically we've had so many specials and you got to listen to this and things we've done for stuff like Coverthon, things like that, that we've done more than 100 episodes of Soundography, but this is our 100th official episode of Soundography.
Prime episode, you want to call it that.
Prime. Soundography Prime. But we do want to hear from you on this one because we do want to hear what your college rock playlist was. Email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at the Soundography on Twitter. I'd love to see you try and fit a 10 song playlist into a 244 character tweet or whatever it is, 288 characters.
280, isn't it?
280, whatever it is. I thought it was 144.
You hear it every week, Brian. Scott says it every week.
Yeah, but he gets it wrong every time. He always corrects himself. He starts out with 144 characters. I mean, 280 characters. I thought it was 288. I could be wrong. I thought it was just double. In any case, see if you can fit your playlist into that and tweet it to us at The Soundography. Everything else, just go to soundography.com. You'll find a link and a show notes for every episode that we've done. You can download old episodes that you may have missed. You can listen to our playlist with links directly to our Spotify playlists. You'll also find a link to Amazon to buy what we recommend. I don't even know what I'll link to in this case.
I bet you there's Nirvana,
never mind.
I bet you that's what I call the 90s or something like that.
Yeah, but that's going to be mainstream. Probably one of our soundtracks, like Faculty might be a good one.
Or singles.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't even talk about Smashing Pumpkins. Yeah. So that's all there at soundography.com. Of course, a place to support the show by going to Patreon, patreon.com/soundography. And of course, leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear your good reviews. We'd love for everybody to hear your good reviews. And if you have a bad review, send it directly to us. No point sharing that with the world. Just kidding. Got to take the good with the bad, just like the facts of life. Next week is Badfinger, a band from the 60s that people probably know for a couple big songs. No Matter What was a big Badfinger song. Not Air That I Breathe, but there was something along those lines by Badfinger.
Hey, do you know where they're from?
I don't, actually. Here we go. Welsh English rock band, yeah. Formed in Swansea. So they're English. Day After Day, that's the other big song of theirs. Day After Day. Anyway, there you go. Badfinger is who we're covering next week. So be here for that. Anything to close us out, Hammond?
You know what? I'm glad the 90s came. I'm glad the 90s was there. And I'm glad the 90s moved on.
Yes. Well said. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.